Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Bonjour, je m'appelle Kathy Irway, and you are listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I am attempting to speak French because today I'm so excited. We have Hilary Davis in the studio.
Kathy, it's so good to be back. Thank
you. Yes, thanks for joining us back in the station. Hilary, you are a world-class author, lecturer, culinary instructor, journalist, and all-around expert on French cuisine. Is it le or la cuisine?
La cuisine.
Okay, la cuisine de la
feminine.
France. Okay.
De la France, oui.
Cuisine is feminine, of course.
Oui. Your accent's perfect.
Oh,
really good.
Merci beaucoup. So your new book, though, it is so beautiful. It is called The French Oven, and I gotta say, this might be the only book I've seen that is focused around a kitchen appliance.
You know, there's a really great, there is another book. It's called Sheet Pan Suppers.
Oh, okay.
Which we all are starting to really love.
Yeah,
that book is fun, and all the recipes are on just on a sheet pan, you know, just throw all this stuff.
Actually, I lied. Remember? I remember now recently a book that's all about the spiralizer, which is kind of hilarious. But
and I want that one.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
No, it's fun, but this makes so much sense because, well, we can get into a lot of the recipes, but there's so many things you can do with it. But also, I feel that the French oven, or Dutch oven, as we tend to call it, too, it's so emblematic of a certain home cooking French tradition, and it speaks volumes. And
it speaks to what all the cookbooks that I write are meant to do, because for me, French cooking is, we think of it as sort of fussy and frilly and hard to do, and so many techniques and haute cuisine
around
it.
Yeah.
Oh my God! And if you go into a regular home, there, it's sort of thrown in a pot,
right?
You know, and I'm doing one now just on desserts, and the desserts are just, you know, simple cakes and puddings. And so French cuisine is the ultimate comfort food. It's the ultimate home food. It never aspired to be anything more than just give pleasure to people in your home and your friends.
And you really hit something on the nail by focusing on this French oven, because so many great things and so many memories are formed around it. It's such a visceral sight, and it's beautiful, and it's substantial, right?
Yeah.
I certainly can't remember, you know, any of the crappy nonstick pans that my mom may have used for like 2 years and then replaced with another.
Well, you know, the other thing about these, the reason I wrote this book too is a really personal one, because Dutch ovens we all love. They're those heavy cast iron enameled pots that we love to make stews and soups and everything in. And when you're a bride, it's the first thing you ask for on your registry because they're so expensive.
Or Christmas presents.
Right. But for me, after years of living there and collecting them and cooking
in France,
I think the French ones are the best. And that's why this is called Le French Oven. Just sort of give a little homage to the ones made in France. Because for me, the others, I don't know where they come from. You know, they're from Brazil, they're from China, and that's not to denigrate them. But as we know, French quality standards are so high, and their design level is at such a high level. I mean, they're very high tech now, creating French ovens that are light to pick up out of
that
porcelain.
Doesn't sound good.
And they can go up to 550 or higher degrees. And they're beautiful. They're modern. Some are copper. The designs are exquisite. So I concentrated this homage to the ones made in France, and the little mini cocottes, because yes. all those manufacturers make the little tiny ones, the individual ones.
Right.
That are so sweet, and there isn't a cookbook for them. Ah,
that's true. Right. And, you know, certainly there's this whole heritage that goes behind the makers in France.
Huge.
That are making it, and the purposes that they're making it for, they're very close to, I would imagine. So
I mean, Revol is one.
Okay.
And that's a high-tech one that I really like. It's probably one of my favorites. I shouldn't say that,
yeah,
but I love
how
it.
You break down some of the brands, because a lot of people know it just Le Creuset.
Yeah, so I give you all the brands and Le Creuset since 1925.
Emily Henry.
Emile Henry, as I say it, but you said it better. But, you know, for instance, Revol is 11th generation family.
Oh, wow.
And the factory workers have been there for four generations, passing on the job from hand to hand. And the other thing that I love about this in today's world, each one's a snowflake. Each one is unique. Totally unique.
Wow.
They're handmade.
That's
they
amazing.
Don't come off an assembly line. So you walk into the factories and guys are pouring hot metal into sand molds. That sand mold goes away, dissipates once that
No
little,
way.
Yeah. And then they hand spray on this enamel. And Emile Henry goes so far as to sign, have those people sign each one that they make on the bottom. So if you buy one now or you go in the department store, turn it over.
Oh, wow.
And you'll see the person's name.
Gosh.
And I think, you know, that connection to the person is just this intangible for me. I mean,
you don't see that with anything these days.
No.
A whole lot. That's amazing. You mentioned the mini cocottes, but are these all, like, large or small? Are they termed cocotte?
In France, a French oven or a Dutch oven is a cocotte.
Okay.
And then the little mini ones are like the little mini-me's. They look like the big guys, but they're just 8 ounces.
You know, they're so adorable, but I find a lot of people not knowing what to do with them. Mm-hmm. So I need to point them out to the first section of your book, which is all about those wonderful little...
It's all appetizers you can throw together in those little guys. They're
and
fun.
Gratins.
And then I've got desserts for
desserts,
them at the back.
Course.
And the desserts are really the fun part.
The mini quiche.
Yeah.
And everything's so tasty. It's kind of insane. Also, this book, there's a lot of foods that are very, you know, traditional and familiar. You think of pâte-à-feu, which I want to get into. Mm-hmm. But there's some foods that I have not quite heard of. Mm-hmm. For instance, a
Dieppe is a village on the west coast of France, right on the ocean. And so you can travel up the coast 30 miles, and they'll make a fish stew one way, and you come down to Dieppe.
Okay.
And you can pull yourself a chair up to a table on the beach, and they will make you a fish stew Dieppoise, and that's what I'm putting in here. I wanted
lovely.
Something a little different.
So it's from Dieppe.
Dieppe.
The
way they
the
make
style.
It in Dieppe.
I see. So let's start off with, like, because France is a kind of small country, but there are so many distinct regions. Mm-hmm. So there's Niçoise, there's the Alsace. If you had to break it down into major categories, like, what do we need to know?
Well, if you go up into Alsace, it's one of my favorite areas, and that's Germanic.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to get heavier food. You're going to get
creams
and sturdy stews, sturdy soups.
Okay.
If you move to the left on the map of France, you'll still see a little croissant on your map, and you'll see little cheeses on your map. But then imagine cows and vineyards, because as you move to the left into Normandy, now you're getting heavy cream butters. And in fact, I had it this morning, a beautiful butter. Butters, cheeses. You'll see apple orchards on your map, and they make a lot of Calvados there. So it's very fun to drive from Paris out to Normandy.
Yes.
Because you not only pass all these beautiful chateaux, but you pass fat bovine content cows, and you see apple trees, and then you come to the ocean, and you have that amazing, you know, the oysters and the seafood. So that area is beautiful.
Right.
you know, if you're a culinary traveler, that's heaven.
Wow.
You know, and then my favorite, where I lived for over 11 years, is the Riviera
south.
In
okay.
the south, in Nice.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're very healthy. That's Mediterranean.
Provençal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Olive oil, fish.
Sounds like dramatic contrast, too.
Very dramatic.
Yeah.
Totally different. And if you go to the... If you look at your map and you're going to the west and then at the very bottom left, mm-hmm. you're in Basque country right by Spain.
So delicious.
So
yeah,
the food there is like
unique.
Oh, very different.
Culture.
Mm.
Where do we get all the wine-based stews and mm-hmm. like, you know...
Coq au vin, beef
yes,
bourguignon.
Bourguignon.
Yeah, so Burgundy is to the right on
okay.
your map in Burgundy.
I see.
And then to the left you have Bordeaux, mm-hmm. and they do Coq au vin. And then if you go up to Alsace, I have in here a recipe for Coq au Riesling or chicken and Riesling wine. And that's another form of
Coq au vin.
Coq au vin.
Yeah.
It's just you're using a beautiful, light, fruity Riesling, and I put in mushrooms.
Oh, yum.
Yeah, and grapes.
So this is basically, those are the kind of foods that I think about when I think of
Good.
Dutch oven.
Good, and that's France. I mean,
yeah.
We do have haute cuisine, and that's mm-hmm. a thrill. You know, three times a year, mm-hmm. special occasions, you go to the finest restaurant you can afford and treat yourself. But the joy sure. comes from walking down the street or finding a wonderful little auberge that's cooking in copper pots, you know.
Auberge, right.
Oh, you know, another cool place to go?
Oh, what? Yeah?
If you're over in Normandy and Brittany, there's where Moviel, one of the French oven manufacturers, is. There's a city of copper.
Oh, wow.
And they've been making copper pots there, like, for centuries.
Oh, fun.
And, it's in Normandy, and it's called the City of Copper, and that's where you find Moviel. And Moviel are those a little expensive, but
yes.
they're the copper and brass.
Those things are less. So
yeah.
a lot of these things that it really strikes me that these things are built to last.
They're
I don't think you
four
could
generations could use them. They're great.
Break them if you even tried.
Mm-mm.
So. No. And I wouldn't recommend trying.
No, you don't want to drop them on your foot, but, you know.
And then you it carries so much memories, too, mm-hmm. of food and passed down through the ages. And I loved reading your recollection of your grandmother's Dutch mm-hmm. oven in the beginning. So that was really lovely to hear. And you still have that pot.
I still have it.
In a beautiful place on your cabinet.
Yeah.
So just a note, when you buy one of these, just think of your granddaughter, maybe, one of these days.
Yeah, pass them on, share them with friends.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the one thing that's really interesting, too, is, you know, if you happen to get this book, mm-hmm. is you can use it as a travel guide.
Oh, yes.
You know, because the book talks about the regions where they are made and why. You know, Revol or Emile Henry use porcelain and the other guys use metal. Well, Revol and Henri those families happened to live in villages where they had natural deposits of clay. Then you need this white kaolin.
Sand?
White kaolin.
Okay.
And then they thought, well, how are we going to make our living? And so they... Mm-hmm. You know, started making pottery, and as the generations went on, they learned how to fire them
mm-hmm.
and get them to take higher and higher temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
So some of your Dutch ovens, if you travel to Burgundy and go see Emile Henry, which is a fun place to visit, that would be part of your trip. And
okay.
you can visit the factory and go buy their products and see them make it.
Oh, wow.
And
that's rare.
And they're light to pick up, and they're really, really pretty colors. And then you drive, you know, south or to Normandy, and you can go visit Moviel, and you can go north and Staub, which mm-hmm. everyone's in love with Staub.
Yes.
They're made in Alsace. So it makes sort of a fun, if you're a culinary traveler, you know, you can make this little trip around France and visit all these great places, too.
Too bad I was only a college student when I went to Normandy, and I just went to the D-Day beach, and it was kind of a downer, but it seemed like the right thing to do at the time. But no, I love how the book, it is a kind of like a virtual travel in itself, just looking through, and I just love how seamlessly the photos kind of display a little bit of lifestyle and folks around mm-hmm. France just doing their things and how this food really like plays an integral part in everyday
it's everyday
and
life
eating and cooking.
The other reason that the other way I made this book, and I think I just wanted to point that out too because it's fun or it's utilitarian, mm-hmm. is I'm trying to teach how to use these things.
Yeah,
you know, because so many of us just pick it up for a stew or soup,
and that would be a shame if you just use it for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's probably one of the most valuable yeah. tools I have in my kitchen.
You can use
deep fry.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're heavy, kids can't by accident.
They retain that heat
and
level.
And they retain the heat.
Yeah.
And they deep fry beautifully. I make my jams in them.
Mm-hmm.
I bake cakes in them. I bake no-knead bread in them.
Yes.
I do a quick pizza for two in them.
I
they're small.
Pizza.
So you just do, you
that
know, you just
great.
Get one at a time. And then, you know, you
quiche,
just
like you, made
you can
in
do
there.
Anything in these,
yeah.
anything. You can braise, you
and
can bake.
Oh, what's it called? Paella, too.
Yeah.
A lot of people think I need to have a paella pan, but.
No.
Nope.
No. There's a one pot pasta I do in here. That's fun, too. You just throw in the pasta.
Mm-hmm.
And then you throw in chicken broth and white wine.
I see. So it's really just all
it cooks
together.
Right there. The pasta absorbs all that liquid. Mm-hmm. And by the time it does that in about 8 minutes, in your Cuisinart, you make what I call a flavor bomb. I just put really strong things like garlic and lemon and tuna and anchovies, and you whiz it all up and you throw it on your fresh pasta and toss it, and so now you have this very flavorful moist pasta dish, and you can throw on tomatoes and whatever.
That is so clever.
And then you can carry it to the table in the pot.
Right.
So the only reason, you know, I put in that recipe was just to show versatility.
Yeah.
You know, you cook in it and then
pots,
bring it.
Unless you're like a soup maker professionally, like stock pots. I
yeah.
just use my Dutch oven. So
yeah.
So much more to talk about. We're just going to cut to a quick little commercial and musical interlude and be right back.
Raised by the rays of the falling sun, cruel outrage about your Cupid, they snap the killer of the mighty python. So a typical to Tipple A ignites a heart and turns the other tail. His animals to God to glory.
If I had a magic wand, tomorrow everyone in the world would have enough food to eat that was culturally appropriate and delicious. The planet would be thriving because all the food would have been grown and produced in a way that sustains us, both our bodies and our world. But man, I do not have a magic wand. What I do have is you and this radio station, the Heritage Radio Network. That's what we're here to do. We're here to help lead the way to a future that's more delicious, that's more fun, where we're healthier, where the planet's healthier, and we want you to be a part of that. We can't do it without you. As a nonprofit radio station, we depend on the support of our listeners. So take a minute out of your day, visit the website, and click the big beating donate tab. Throw us a few bucks. Every bit helps. We're counting on you.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
All right, we're back chatting more with Hillary Davis, author of her latest cookbook, The French, Le French Oven. The last cookbook was French Comfort Food. That was a great episode. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you for having me.
Glad we didn't scare you away.
No.
So I was just thinking of dishes that, you know, you can make so many dishes that you wouldn't realize mm-hmm. in a Dutch oven, as mm-hmm. we were just talking about. But what are some dishes that you can really only make in a Dutch oven? And one came to mind for me, at least. Mm-hmm. I learned about le cassoulet, mm-hmm. Which literally means the pot itself.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's this rustic kind of peasant-y bean.
From the Southwest.
Yeah, from the Southwest. Mm-hmm. Bean, speckled with all manner of sausages and duck parts and fat,
I love
goose
cassoulet.
Fat.
Oh, yes. My God, I love it. It's one of my favorite
and
dishes.
It seems like you need something really sturdy to kind of
You need
just,
it. It would be silly to bring it out and, like, you know, a tin. No.
And also you need that cover to really cook the beans through in all this wonderful flavor stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's what's called, and these dishes are known for slow cooking. Mm-hmm. And that addresses that. Slow cooking means you have slow cooking with a slow cooker, which you plug in, but these are the original slow cookers. And so it means these French ovens, you heat up very slowly. Mm-hmm. You can't crank up the heat and just use them. You're supposed to generally gradually bring them up to heat, and then they retain heat much afterwards. So they're beautiful for slow cooking.
Yes.
And a cassoulet is a slow cooking dish. It can take, you know, 2-3 hours. Mm-hmm. And so you go watch TV or play a game of tennis, and you come back and, you know, this amazing dish has been simmering. And as it simmers, the beans break down and become soft. And these beautiful sausages release all their herbs and juices. And then I like duck in mine. I love duck. So I put in a lot of duck. You can put in more meats.
It's studded with all these surprises.
Wonderful. Lots of garlic. Lots of garlic. And then, you know, by the time you get it off the stove, so amazing. And then a lot of people love to put a garlicky breadcrumb crust on it and shove it in the oven and parsley and crisp it up. Mm. And it's just the ultimate comfort food. And it's so economical, and that's what French food is about.
It's
really farm food, economical food that would feed a family for days.
I gotta say, the few times I have made that dish and I've had to bring it somewhere, and I just took it out of the oven, covered it, or I think it was already covered. And, you know, an hour later, when I reached my destination, it was still piping warm.
Yeah.
You know, it just really retains that. And I can't think of anything that would do that in a similar way.
Yeah, they're a joy. You know, I often say that the joy of cooking has sort of dissipated a little bit. Mm. And I think part of bringing it back for me is the utensils, the things
that
you...
Yeah, get excited about
this. Yeah, like have a beautiful pot
to
cook in. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, and use the best ingredients. And if you're going to spend an hour and find joy in that, which I do...
Yeah.
I want to use the best.
You definitely
do. I want to use cool stuff. I want to get excited.
I mean, there's so much talk about things that are made... Foods, and like the origin and provenance and locality and like how food is grown, but it's definitely really fun to think about those other things that go into your cooking too.
Yeah.
So thanks for putting the spotlight on this wonderful. And why do we call it Dutch oven, by the way?
They originated in Holland.
Yeah, because of the, and then they were inspired by like Chinese pots.
Iron technology was from China, and then it came to Europe, and they made the cannonballs, and then it evolved from there to make these pots that had little feet on them, and we still use them here.
Okay. You put in the hearth right away.
Right, you put in the hearth, or here now, Dutch ovens, so there's a huge amount of people in America that use the ones that you put right on charcoal at a campground, and you cook in it. But they have the little, and those...
Don't try this with other kinds of pots, please.
Don't use your good ones. And then that was sort of the history. And then it
the
came
worst
over.
Disaster in camping. Like,
oh God.
Okay, sorry. They came
yeah,
over
and then
from
it came over from Holland, and the English saw them, and so then the English imported them, and then the English settlers came to America, and those little sturdy pots, they are like ovens.
I see.
Basically. So, because they have high sides and they retain heat.
Right.
So if you think about it, you've got a little self-contained oven.
Mm-hmm.
So the settlers would throw them on the chuck wagons and go west. and be able to cook breads and cornbreads and stews right in these wonderful Dutch ovens.
You can make all manner of like cakes and desserts.
I make cakes. I bake in them. They're amazing.
A warm apple almond crumble with salted butter sauce.
Yeah.
Butterscotch sauce, like you suggest in this dessert section.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things I love, too, is I think there's a misnomer about roasting meats in these big roasting pans that are, you know, low.
And then you have to have the rack and all
and
this.
And the stuff. And when I do one in a Dutch oven or a French
like
oven.
Like a whole chicken?
I do a whole anything. Mm-hmm. I do a big standing rib roast.
Ooh.
The beauty of them is those high sides.
Yeah.
So the heat emanates all the way around your roast.
Right, right.
So you get this beautiful,
crispy. And it doesn't touch the sides. It just radiates.
It's
so
like
you still get the crisp.
It's like a perfect oven. It's mm-hmm. close to the meat. So it emanates this high heat.
Of course.
And I get the most amazing crisp outsides. Yet the meat's just beautiful. And I put them on a bed of vegetables, which we all do.
Mm-hmm.
And the fat drips down. So you're doing duck fat on, you know, duck with duck fat on potatoes. You could do a standing rib roast with, you know, big chunks of veg.
This is getting me excited for Thanksgiving. And I don't usually get that excited about a turkey, but now I'm thinking that there's a lot of possibilities here. And to anyone who's ever roasted like a whole something or other, like a rib roast or something, rack of lamb, that dripping that will happen if you're sort of poking over the edges, you know, of your pan, I guess that's something to look out for. But yeah, if you have something more encased,
mm-hmm.
it cooks quicker.
It cooks quicker. It's better.
Mm-hmm.
All the way around, and then you get the vegetables underneath.
Of course, this is not like anything new.
No,
I'm
just exploring it and finding it.
It's so funny.
I'm always learning. I'm always.
Thank you for showing us the way. I mean, let's talk about this beautiful photo here of your beef pot au feu deconstructed, because
mm-hmm.
that's a famous dish, and it means pot. In
pot over the fire.
Over the fire.
Yeah.
Okay.
And all over France, they make a pot au feu. They make it everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And each village has a different way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just take the liberty of doing whatever I want with it.
Yeah.
So,
a pot in the fire.
It's a pot at my pot in the fire, but I deconstruct mine. So usually the French just throw everything in the pot. It's usually a Sunday. They go to church. They come back. They dawdle. Mm-hmm. They have fun. And then the pot's ready. You know, it cooks slowly on the back burner. I do the meat, and I like big marrow bones.
Ooh.
So I have that all going, but then in the oven, I do my marrow bones as well. I roast off marrow bones and vegetables in the oven, so that's why I call it deconstructed. I have it also making the broth.
Right.
But when I serve it, I like those just caramelized vegetables as an added, you know, layer on top, and I like my beef marrow bones and scoop it out because you've lost that in your broth.
Yeah, did it go? Okay, I'm wondering about the marrow bones.
You pull
bones.
Those out and throw them away. But you still have the beautiful ones. They're sort of cannibalistic.
The ones that you
big
roasted.
Ones, and you roasted. So you get to have that too.
Scoop it out.
With a little flake of salt on top and a baguette to spread it on.
It is so luxurious.
Oh, I love it. I mean, the simplest thing is so heavenly.
Right. I know. And that's why I just love a recipe that just basically gives you a lot of liberty. You know, it just throw it in a pot.
Just throw it in the pot. That's what this is about.
I notice you also have a halibut version.
I do.
Which looks delicious.
The point of that was just to show how you can do a slow one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not as long. You can. It's the versatility of
poached a poached whole fish and that's easy enough to do with salmon. You have olive oil poached salmon.
That's a fun one.
Oof.
I just learned how to do that just before writing the book. It's actually an Italian technique that I stole the technique.
Uh-huh.
Once I learned it, I fell in love with it. But Dutch ovens are perfect for this.
Yeah,
now, this
big.
Is going to sound awful, okay, but you fill about 4 to 6 inches of good olive oil.
Well, expensive, but
no,
okay.
No, I'll tell you why. In your Dutch oven and slowly heat it, and you put in your salmon.
Uh-huh.
You cook it very slow, like at 140 degrees. So slow. And I do it with Meyer lemons and crushed pink peppercorns and bay leaves.
Beautiful.
So it perfumes that oil. When you eat that salmon, it's as if it's just butter, literally butter in your mouth. But it's still economical, Kathy. It's okay because all that olive oil, I just put it in a ball jar in the fridge, and it's seafood flavored.
Uh-huh.
So now, later in the week, I'll cook shrimp in it, or I'll use a little for pasta with clam broth.
Okay.
You know, you just work it off for a week or two on any of your other seafood-oriented dishes. You've got that beautifully flavored, scented shrimp. Mm. You cook in there. Now your olive oil has a little taste of shrimp and salmon. And
that
you can play
good to
with
me.
It. Yeah.
I'd be happy to whisk up a salad dressing with that instead of like anchovies and add, you know, just that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, you could do your Asian spin from your book. We could take the oil from my book.
We need to work on a book together, Hillary. I can see something good happening.
I can see your book. We'll put this oil in it and you can play with it in an Asian way. What would you add? You'd put in sesame oil. No. Ginger.
Yeah. Oh, ginger, yes.
Definitely ginger.
Mm-hmm. Maybe some chilies.
And what's the name of your book again?
The Food of Taiwan.
That's right.
Le Cuisine de... I don't know how to say it in French.
Okay, now
we'll
you
have
got
to look.
Me.
I'm sorry.
I don't know.
We'll solve that next time. So thank you so much for joining us again,
so much
Hillary.
Fun.
I hope you keep writing amazing cookbooks.
Thank you.
And
you
joining
too,
us.
Kathy.
All right. So thanks so much for tuning in. And we'll see you next week on Eat Your Words. Today's show is engineered by Liz Smith, the best and brightest. Today's break music was provided by Odetta Hartman. The theme song to my show is by the California Honey Drops. And today's show is sponsored by Fairway Market. Also, as a listener, thanks for tuning in. And if you'd like what you heard, tell your friends to subscribe to the show on iTunes and feel free to get in touch with us at heritageradionetwork.org. Next up, a short clip from Beer Sessions Radio.
Drew, you've done a number of blind tastings, right?
Oh, yeah.
And what typically comes up? Like, give us some anecdotes, challenges. I mean, you think it's going to be lively, but you guys are kind of serious and quiet.
On episode 214 of Beer Sessions Radio, Drew Nichols discusses what testers taste for in blind IPA taste tests.
One of the challenges is trying to define the off flavors, especially for home brewers, because... You know, there's so much science involved in brewing now. Repeatability is very important for a brand. And, you know, most beers you drink, they have a brand name. And you expect something when you open that bottle. And I don't think people fully appreciate how alive a beer is. You know, it's a live product. It's made from agricultural products. It's made from flowers. It's made from grain. When I say flowers, I literally mean hops are a flower. And, you know, that's a very perishable item. And so these beers change a lot with time. It's hard to get the yeast right. And so for homebrewers especially, they can get a lot of off flavors in their beer. And I think a lot of homebrewers and a lot of people who aspire to become BJCP judges, it's for that knowledge of the off flavors. Because there's so many weird little chemicals a yeast can spit out when it gets pissed off. And each one of those things has a different off flavor. And if you can recognize what that flavor is, then you can recognize what the mistake was in the process.
So you say in particular when you're judging homebrew, there's certain things you look for.
To find out more about blind IPA taste tests, listen to the rest of episode 214 of Beer Sessions Radio and hear from the other guests. If you liked this episode, you can find the rest of the Beer Sessions Radio shows at heritageradionetwork.org and iTunes.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. To learn more and donate, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more. Thanks for listening.